Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It was one of the best weekends of my life. You got Halloween on Thursday. My daughter, my oldest, is 5, so she's really getting into it. It's awesome. Youngest just turned 9 months old, so she has no idea. You can't give her candy or anything like that, but her being a part of it was awesome. On Friday, we went to the zoo. Both girls loved it. The monkeys were so cute, these gorillas. One gorilla was breastfeeding off the mommy gorilla, and my 9-month-old was like, I do this every day. It's amazing. She was gooing and gawing, or ooing and ahhing, whatever you say about that. Sunday family birthday party. We played at the playground, my daughter and I, oldest, on Saturday morning for like 4 hours and just do whatever you want. I don't care. We're not going anywhere. You want to go down a slide? Do that. You want to play soccer? Do that. You want to do whatever. It was awesome. Just time with family.
And you also left out the fact that you got to watch Penn State and Pitt lose on Saturday, huh?
Happy you bring that up, because that's where we start the show proper right now in about 30 seconds. Just wanted to get that out. The sports talk can be quite negative, and we mess around a lot on this show. But I had a great weekend with the girls. Just wanted to throw that out there. Nothing better than being a dad. Yep, Pitt lost. Bad. Penn State lost. Different. Also very bad. We'll spend a lot of the show today talking about the Steelers, where they sit kind of at their halfway point. Look at some of what happened yesterday in the NFL. The NFL trade winds are swirling. But we're going to start with both local college football teams and where their seasons go from here. And maybe even beyond this season, where these programs go from here. That's next in 30 seconds. Bang.
Luster takes 2 steps in the knee, and that'll kill the clock. Not a good night for the Panthers as they bow to a team that showed a lot of speed and a lot of skill, and they won the battle up front for most of the night, both ways. Dip of the hat to the Mustangs of SMU. They keep their ACC slate perfect, but the Panthers drop not only their first of the season, but certainly the first in conference play. Final score, SMU 48, Panthers 25.
And really, it wasn't that close, as the Panthers at one point trailed 48-11. Not a great day for Eli Holstein, but really it was the defense that got its head caved in for about 4 hours on Saturday night. And I wondered all week long, why in the world is Pitt undefeated in ACC play, impressive offensively, impressive the last few weeks, big time defensively, an 8-point underdog against anybody that's not a blue blood? Well, we found out why. SMU's pretty good, folks, and you're allowed to tip your cap to the opponent. Boy, do they have speed. Their wide receivers can run. We saw their tight end could run. Their quarterback could run. He was throwing ropes all over the place. And it was one of the biggest games in SMU history. The biggest game in recent SMU history. So the crowd was juiced. The team was ready for the moment. And Pitt falls flat. And they're now 7-1. Is the season already a success? I know. It's weird to ask that after we talk about all the things that happened and how poorly it went on Saturday night. But Pitt won 3 games last year. Pat Narduzzi maybe was on the hot seat. Probably not. But I think reasonable people could have argued that 3-9 in, what, year nine? Not good enough. So to win seven games when you'd only played seven, to me, the rest of the season can't be gravy. You still need to finish fairly strong. But before the year, I talked to Pat Bostic. I talked to Doran Dickerson. I talked to other people in and around this Pitt program. And pretty much to a man, they all said 6-6 with a win over West Virginia. We'll take that to get the program back on track. Winning begets winning. Losing in today's college football landscape begets losing. So 3-9, you got to find a way to get back on even footing. So 6-6, you beat your rival. Let's celebrate. Well, they win their first seven games. I'm not a Pitt fan, nor am I a Penn State fan. But I have questions, I have thoughts, concerns about both programs, but I can't talk about both programs as a fan. I love that I get to do this every morning, and I love it because I'm from here. And I am a Penguins fan, a Steelers fan, a Pirates fan. It's okay to admit that. I'm not a journalist. I'm a fan. Of these two programs, I am not. So I want to hear from you today, Penn State fans, Pitt fans at 412-928-9370, and you tell me how you're feeling, and we'll discuss. For me, if Pitt goes 8-4, and Holstein comes back, and Cade Bell comes back, that's a good year. They go 9-3, that's a great year. They go any better than that, you should be dancing in the streets. It wasn't good on Saturday night, but it has been good. That's my perspective. From 3-9 to ... I don't think they're losing out. I don't think they're going to wind up 7-5. I would have taken that before the year if I were a Pitt fan. As things change, so too should expectations. As information changes, I always say this, so too should opinion. Like, losing out's not going to be good. Losing out is why I say the whole season can't be gravy. But you win 8, you win 9, you win 10, you should be satisfied. Because as this year has unfolded, you're hoping, okay, maybe they can go to the ACC championship game. And hey, that's still not out the window. I don't know that it's likely. But that's how Pitt fans started to feel. Oh, we could go to the ACC championship. We could make the college football playoff. As this season has unfolded, and you do see that this Pitt team obviously has some warts, I've always thought maybe this is the year before the year. The Sharks are playing well. Not a great showing from them or anybody really on Saturday night. But those guys will be back. Holstein should be back. Cade Bell should be back. This could be the year before the year. So you win 8 or 9 games, and I think Pitt fans should be really happy about that. But I'm not a Pitt fan. So I want to hear from Pitt fans at 412-928-9370. As for Penn State, they did the thing that they always seem to do under James Franklin. James Franklin is 1-7 against top 10 teams at home. He's 6-10 against ranked teams at home. He's 1-9 versus top 5 teams. 1-10 against Ohio State. He's 3-7 against Michigan, is James Franklin. And he got in an argument coming off the field with a guy dressed up like Sherlock Holmes. At least I think that's what he was going for. Perhaps that's just how the young man dresses. Can't happen. James Franklin gets booed off the field. James Franklin walking through the tunnel where they've got some Penn State fans who can kind of watch all that behind the scenes. They're giving him the business. 11 years in state college for James Franklin, and against the top tier programs in the Big Ten, hasn't been able to get it done. But here's where I come down. He'd have made the playoffs, by my count, about 5 times. Let's just say, for argument's sake, 5 times in 11 years. This year, they're going to go 11-1. They're going to make the playoff. So that'd be, what, 6 times in 11 years. So Franklin can't beat Ohio State, can't beat Michigan. Penn State fans are pissed. Should they let him go if he can't win a playoff game? 412-928-9370. I say no. Now, I'd be ticked as a Penn State fan if they didn't get it done, but I want to see how it continues to play out in this college football playoff era. I'd give it a year or two. Like, this looks like a perennial playoff team to me. Penn State is a better program under Franklin than it had been. The 4 years leading up to Franklin, not so good. First couple of years under Franklin, it takes time to get your footing. And then he's taking this thing to the next level. They're a better program than what? Like 7, 8, or 9 college football programs around the country? Seriously. We could list them. You could list them. We've all got maybe different lists in our head, but 7, 8, or 9 programs are better year to year than Penn State. That's it. So let's see how it goes in the playoff. Georgia fired Mark Richt and they started winning. They were good under Richt. They became great under Kirby Smart. But usually, when you fire a good coach, the Nebraska thing happens. Oh, you're 9-3, Bo Pelini, 9-3, Bo Pelini, 9-3, Bo Pelini. Then, not so much after he's gone. You got to be careful what you ask for, what you wish for. West Virginia under Daniel Holgorsen, 20 games over 500 in his tenure. Won an Orange Bowl, won 10 games a couple of times. They say, you know what? It's not working anymore. You go do your own thing. He takes the Houston job. And then Neil Brown has basically been as average could be a 500 coach for 6 years. Be careful what you wish for. I think about Pitt and Jamie Dixon. Jamie Dixon was going to the tournament just about every single year. Had Pitt a while ago, sure, in the Elite Eight, winning Big East conference championships and Big East tournaments, the best coach in Pitt basketball history. And sure, there were diminishing returns. His last tournament team, they couldn't score. It was brutal. But he became a victim of his own success, and Pitt has now made the NCAA basketball tournament just one time in 8 years since his departure. Be careful what you wish for. I'm not a Penn State fan, though. So I want to hear from you at 412-928-9370. Do you want James Franklin gone? Or are you buying what I'm selling? Because what I say is, see what happens the rest of the year. They might have a home playoff game. If you lose that, the seat gets warmer. But I'd give it a couple of years and see if they can be this perennial college football playoff team the way that I think they could be. I don't think people realize first couple years under Franklin and the 4 years prior to that, average at a place where they pack in 110,000 people and have one of, if not the best game day experiences in the entire country. Before that, it was, Bill O'Brien did a nice job getting them going again, really with all the sanctions and things of that nature. But even Joe Pa had some up and down seasons before that. And what were they before Joe Pa? You just can't say, we're Penn State, we get rid of James Franklin, and we're still going to be this perennial playoff contending type team. You don't know that. And is it the greatest sin in the world to not be Ohio State or Michigan? Seriously. Michigan wins the national championship last year. They put a bunch of guys into the NFL. They cheated their asses off. That's why Jim Harbaugh got out of there, so you can't beat them. Okay. And then Ohio State is one of the top 3 or 4 programs in the country. And some could argue it's, behind Bama, historically, and with what they're able to do in modern times. Is it the worst thing in the world? You can't beat that guy in that program? If you're going to be getting into the playoff more years than not? I don't know. I'm asking. 412-928-9370. So two different topics all at once. Pitt and Penn State. Pitt, I want to talk to you people. What needs to happen the rest of the way for you to go, okay, this season's a success? And Penn State, where are you on James Franklin? 412-928-9370. The numbers aren't good. 1-7 top 10 teams at home. 6-10 ranked teams at home, 1-9 top 5 teams, 1-10 versus Ohio State, 3-7 against Michigan. But again, they'd have made the playoffs 5 times. They're going to make the playoff, I think, this year. Because they don't really stub their toe against anybody. They lose to the more talented team, and that's what Ohio State is. The more talented team. They're more talented than just about anybody. They beat everybody else. Is that okay with you, Penn State fans? 412-928-9370. The Fan Morning Show is brought to you by Guardian Protection, your hometown home and business security company. We'd love for you to give us a call on that fan hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. I'm in the unique position of working today with a big-time Penn State fan, Sean Myers. We'll get his thoughts on Franklin when we come back. But yes, we do want to hear from you, 412-928-9370. Right now it is a Sean Myers fan headline.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Should Penn State fire James Franklin if he doesn't win a playoff game? 412-928-9370. And Pitt fans, also same phone number, 412-928-9370. Where does the season go from here? Where does it need to go from here for you to consider this season a success? We'll get to the phones in a moment. I tweeted this out after the Penn State game. Penn State can't win the big one with James Franklin. They'll still be a playoff team and probably will be as long as he's around. Very good, but not great. Second-tier program. And I got a lot of pushback. Oh, Penn State's a top-tier program. Well, if you consider it a top-tier program, then why would you fire James Franklin? When I say second-tier, I want to be clear on this. There's like between 7 and 9 programs that are perennially in the conversation to be better than Penn State. That's it. And there's 130, give or take, what, FBS programs? So it's not a terrible place to be. And it's been a 14 playoff for a little while now. Had it been 12, they'd be there more often than not. I think they're going to be in it this year. If I were the Penn State athletic director, I would give it a few years. They can't beat Ohio State. Okay. Can't beat Michigan. Okay. What happens in the playoff? Can't beat those teams. Okay. What happens if you play, I don't know, Tennessee in a playoff game and you beat Tennessee? You still pull out the pitchforks and torches? Let it play out. He's going to get you there. He's going to get you there a lot. And if he can't win there, now you can have the conversation. But it's a new era in college football. I think you got to see where it goes. 412-928-9370. You can text us. Brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say, there's never a fee unless we get money for you. And you can get after me on Twitter. Brought to you by South Hills Kia, Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Sean, you're a Penn State guy. Big Penn State guy. I heard you rattling off all kind of Penn State factoids before. I know you're a big Penn State fan. Where do you come down on this whole James Franklin deal?
So first off, I will say, everyone is basically saying they're going to win out, finish 11-1, make the playoffs. I don't know that they're going to win out. They should win out. I think that will be massive. If they do win their final four games, that is a testament to him and improvement, because in past years, their losses have often lingered. I mentioned in 2017, that was their best team. That was the most talented team, way more so than this year's team. They lost to Ohio State by 1 point at the Horseshoe. Probably a better talent-wise team than Ohio State. Then they blew it the next week by losing to Michigan State in a bizarre game with a weather delay. I said in 2021, they had that loss at Iowa where their backup quarterback couldn't even take a snap. That lingered. They lost to Illinois in literally 8 overtimes. If they find a way to right the ship, get these 4 wins, they do get to the playoffs, probably host. I would imagine that they won't drop by more than 2 spots in the rankings if they win out.
Everyone's losing anyhow.
Yes. So 11-1 has never happened under James Franklin. They've always lost at least 2 games. They still didn't beat Ohio State, but 11-1 is something they've never done. And getting in the playoffs, even though it was theoretically going to happen 4 to 6 times previously, theoretically and actuality are 2 different things. Now they know that pressure. It's easy to say, oh, we would have gotten in. It's like a baseball team that's eliminated and then does well in the final month of the season. It doesn't count the same. For them to actually do it, to get into the playoffs, that is an improvement. It's not maybe the ultimate success this season, but to get into the playoffs at 11-1 would be a success. And I'll say it depends on who they play in the postseason if they get in. If they play Alabama and lose, I'm not upset. Tennessee, I think, probably would be an even matchup. I wouldn't be devastated if they lost to Tennessee. Now, if they lose to whatever, you know, Boise or BYU, that's a game at home that they should win. So it will come down to that. But for me, 11-1 in the postseason is a clear step forward, at least going back to 2017, where I think 2016 and 2017, they were right on the brink of being that top tier.
Yes.
And they've kind of taken a small step back since then.
Theoretical versus reality is a really good report. Retort. There we go. By you. And I get that. That's well stated. If it had been, okay, everything's on the line, you lose to Ohio State, but you still got to get it done to get into the playoff, maybe they don't because the pressure is on them. That's why you just got to give it time. It's a new era. See if they make it this year. See what happens once they get there. See what happens next year if they make it. What happens once they get there. I think you need to be patient. I do. And if every year now, if for the next couple of years you lose to Ohio State, go to the playoff, lose a playoff game, lose a home playoff game, then yeah, you pull the plug. But I do give it time. 412-928-9370. As for this year, you're right. You don't want Ohio State to beat you twice. Washington at home, white out. You should win. Purdue, terrible. They're awful this year. I mean, just awful.
They have a knack for winning those games, though.
I know, but they are so bad. Maryland, really not good. Minnesota, though, is playing good ball. They're rowing that boat. So be careful with that one on the road. That would be the one that I would worry about a little bit if I were a Penn State fan. As for Pitt, what needs to happen the rest of the way for you to consider this season a success? 412-928-9370. KB in Monroeville, first up on Pitt. Hey, KB.
Hey, sir. Thank you so much for having me again on the show. This means a lot. I was calling in regards to the whole Pitt season.
Yeah.
To me, firstly, tough loss. I was only able to see part of the game, but you know what? I think this Pitt season could be considered a success based on two things. Firstly, can Pitt learn from their mistakes? Looking at their schedule, they're going to be facing two other ranked teams, Clemson and Louisville. Clemson at 19, Louisville at 25. If, we're going to get a loss or two, any normal team was going to have a loss or two during their season. However, if we're going to be facing two other ranked teams, can Pitt learn from their mistakes and try to capitalize on those positive moments during their next two major games later this season?
Do they have to win one of those games, KB, for you to say, okay, this was a good year?
I would say, yeah, definitely the game against Clemson. They're ranked higher than us, and it's a home game. If we can win at home this decisively and make sure it's like a very good, like, 35-14 against Clemson at home, it'd be a nice victory for us. It'd be a nice notch in Pat Narduzzi's belt. And on top of that, I think Narduzzi's been a really good coach for us, but if he can avoid whiplash, last season we went, 3-9. This season, hopefully, 10-2. Next season, if we can get at least 8-4, I think that would help Narduzzi get out of the potential hot seat he may face.
Thank you, KB. Appreciate your perspective. If they go 10-2 this year and 8-4 next year, I think he'd be in some trouble. Not that he would get fired, but if you go 10-2 this year and you bring back Holstein and you bring back Cade Bell and you bring back those linebackers on a defense that did not look good Saturday night, let's not kid ourselves, but has gotten better over the course of the year, you go 10-2 this year and 8-4 next year, I don't know that anybody's satisfied. This year needs to be the jumping off point. And I think that's where ultimately I am on this. I believed coming into the year, this needed to be the let's get our feet even kind of season. Well, now it needs to be the jumping off point. They've already won 7. I think you're probably going 9-3 at worst. You're a 7-point favorite against Virginia Tech. Boston College, you should be able to beat them. You've got these two ranked teams, Louisville playing its best football. They just beat Clemson. Clemson going to be tough, but Pat Narduzzi has had success historically against Clemson, including beating them in Death Valley the year that Clemson won the national championship with Deshaun Watson. So you go 9-3, something like that. It's a great year. Even if you go 9-3 and lose to the best three teams on your schedule, Louisville, Clemson, and SMU, a 6-win improvement is nothing to scoff at, and it's a jumping off point. to me, just to crystallize my opinion on this, I think you got to go 9-3. You go 9-3, maybe you win a bowl game, go 10-3, Holstein's back, Cade Bell's back. Now you're saying, okay, next year we really have a chance to do something special, because at 9-3, with a young quarterback who hasn't played well his last three games, let's not kid ourselves there either, but with a young quarterback poised to get better, with an up-and-coming, exciting offensive coordinator, and having won 9 games, I think you can make a pitch to a lot of people in the transfer portal, hey, we're really close to doing this thing here. Now, I don't want to pretend like Pitt doesn't still have a shot to make the college football playoff. They're still in it. I mean, Miami controls its own fate, and you don't play them. SMU controls its own fate to get to the conference championship game, and you just lost to them. So Pitt could win out and still not make the ACC championship game. And I don't think a one-loss Pitt team without the ACC championship banner makes the college football playoff. I just don't. I think because Clemson just lost and because of the chaos in the Big 12, I think we're going to see something gross, folks. I think we're going to see like 8 or 9 Big 10 SEC teams in the college football playoff. So I think Pitt does need to win the ACC to get into the playoff, and they don't control their own fate there. They have a chance. But I think at 9-3, you walk away from this season going, damn, that's a really good year. Should be proud of our Pitt Panthers. And man, the future is bright. 412-928-9370. Pitt fans want to hear from you. Penn State fans want to hear from you. Penn State fans, do you want Franklin out? Pitt fans, what do you need to see the rest of the way for this season to be a success? 412-928-9370. Right now, it's a Sean Myers fan headline. So now I'm coming under fire on the text line at 412-928-9370 for saying that Penn State is better than all but like 7-9 programs in all of college football. I had a guy who texted in fire James Franklin and then also said there's only like 3 or 4 teams better than Penn State. Well, which is it? Because if you're a top 3-4 program in the country, you don't fire James Franklin. But then they asked me to list the programs that I think are better than Penn State. And I've come up with 8. So I said 7-9. I just picked that off the top of my head as I thought it through. I got 8. I got Georgia. Come on now. Bama. LSU. Ohio State. Michigan. Oregon. Washington. And Clemson. Now I got some pushback on Washington, but Washington has gone to the college football playoff with 2 different head coaches in the last 10-ish years. 2 different coaches, including playing for a national championship last year. Oregon, they've gone to the college football playoff, played for national championships under multiple coaches. Clemson, they've kind of found their level now. Dabo's not buying into NIL, so they've taken a step back, but won national championships. LSU, okay, good, not great under Brian Kelly, but they've won a national championship under each of their last 3 coaches. One of them was Ed Orgeron. Go Tiger. So those would be my 8. Do you got any qualms with that?
I think probably half of those are less consistent than Penn State. There's a little bit more up and down, but their highs are significantly ahead of what Penn State's high watermark has been. So I understand that. I would definitely say if you win a national championship like LSU, you have to be considered above, unless you completely go in the tank, which they haven't. I'm sure there's some people that would say maybe a Notre Dame that has made the playoffs. I think Clemson's pretty close to Penn State now, but you look back at within the past decade, all the success that they had, you know, 7-8 years ago. So I would say Penn State has been consistently better than some of those programs, but they've never reached the high that all of those teams you've alluded to have.
Like Washington a couple of years ago went 4-8. And then they come out, they win 11 games, then last year they win 14 games. You're right about the consistency, no doubt. James, that's why I'm keeping Franklin around. Let him see, let's all see what he can do. That's a better way of saying it. Now with the expanded playoff. Let's see. And if he's losing playoff games the same way he's losing to Michigan and Ohio State, then yeah, get his ass out and see what you can do. But until he's losing playoff games at that rate, I still would rather get to the doggone playoff. 412-928-9370. Texter, are you basing this on this year? No way, Washington and Michigan. No. No. We're talking about overall program standing. And basically last decade or so. Texas, but you talk about the consistency. Yes, Texas made the playoff last year, something Penn State has not done under James Franklin. So yeah, we're shooting for the stars. That's the problem that Penn State fans have with Franklin, is that he hadn't gone to the playoff. Texas has. But Texas has not been consistent enough. And I think under Sarkisian, they've been very, very good. We'll see what happens this year. Before that, as much talent as anybody else, and really not the results. 412-928-9370. Let's go to Rich. Hi, Rich.
Good morning. You got to have somebody in the booth take that snippet where you said playoff games and compare it to the Jim Mora line, because, man, you sounded just like him.
Playoffs?
Hey, here's my thought. I think the sniff test for calling yourself a professional coach should be to win the winnable games. And, you know, we're celebrating, you know, some of these guys, you know, like Narduzzi. He was, you know, 4-5-0 because he won most of his winnable games.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what really separates the professional coach from the Hall of Famer is the championships. But this NIL money, does it matter who's going to be a coach in a couple years? Because everything could be Yankees-Dodgers with all the money coming into college football.
Yeah, it's a good question, and I thank you for the call, Rich, at 412-928-9370. I mean, that was a big concern with NIL, and now starting next year, you're going to have to pay the players 20% of your overall athletic department revenue. Are the rich teams going to get even richer? And what's going to happen to these middling teams? I think, at least right now, we're seeing a ton of parity. A ton of parity. I don't think there's a clear-cut juggernaut number one team in the country. Now, Oregon beat Ohio State. They are a deserving number one. That game comes down to the wire. Penn State, Ohio State. That's a tight game. Goofy stuff happens around the goal line. Penn State has two red zone trips, comes away with 0 points. On the fourth, the goal line stand, and then one of the great interceptions you'll ever see, although the Penn State wide receiver needs to do a much better job there. That game's tight. But you've got Georgia losing to Bama, Bama losing to Vandy, Texas A&M, they were 7-1. They get their doors blown off. Iowa State loses. Kansas State loses. A bunch of big-time teams this year have fallen. And I think it changes next year when you got to start paying the players out of the athletic department's pockets, and there are going to be certain teams that can do that already, and then there's going to be a lot of other teams that are scrambling and trying to figure out how in the world to make that happen. But I think we're seeing a lot of parity right now in college football.
Do you know what is very interesting is Franklin, usually the number one quality he has that people mention is he's a great recruiter, mm-hmm. right? Which, I mean, he's a very good recruiter. The thing is, he isn't recruiting at the same level as Ohio State.
Right.
People that think that they have the same talent, they're wrong. But how much does recruiting matter when it comes down to how much money you can offer an NIL? If your best quality is you're a great recruiter, but you don't have the money, does it really matter? That's where I think in-game great coaches are going to have more impact in college football going forward.
That's well said by you, Sean. And I also think talent isn't always everything, right? I mean, I just mentioned Texas, how much talent they've had compared to everyone but Oklahoma in the Big 12 for a long time, and they had some really bad seasons. You know, Charlie Strong, not great. Tom Herman, not great. The list goes on there. Oklahoma, a lot of talent. Look at what's happened with Brett Venables. Has not looked the same. USC, a ton of talent. And somehow Lincoln Riley really hadn't been able to get it done there despite having a Heisman Trophy winner last year. I think coaches, what they do on Saturdays absolutely matters. Absolutely it matters. There are some programs that I think regardless of coach are going to get it done. Like I was surprised when Ohio State hired Ryan Day because I thought they had their pick of the litter. You can get anybody you want. You're Ohio State. But they win because they're Ohio State. I think LSU, they're not always consistently up there, but their last three coaches have all won national championships because they butt up against Texas. LSU or Louisiana has a whole bunch of talent. Florida's right there. That's a great place to coach football games, and you should be able to win there regardless. I put Penn State a notch below. You should be able to get great talent. I put them just a smidge below. 412-928-9370. We're going to spend most of the rest of the show talking about the Steelers and where they sit now at their halfway-ish point of the season. Mark Caboli going to be in from 8 o'clock until 10. But coming up next, we thought the Penguins were dead. Maybe they're not. We'll get into that briefly. Again, then we'll get into the Steelers at 7. Right now, it's a, I almost said callous, Sean Myers fan headline. Minute mark on the Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Route 19 in Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. And the Fan Morning Show Twitter poll is brought to you by PJ Fitzpatrick Home Improvement. Trust PJ.com. Would you fire James Franklin if he doesn't win a playoff game? You can vote at underscore Adam Crowley. We'll get back to that later on in the show. How about the Penguins, winners of two straight? Sidney Crosby, two goals in each of the last two games. And Sidney Crosby, 7 points in the last three games. Penguins now just 2 points out of a playoff spot. Funny how a couple of wins changes things, kind of. I look at Washington. They soft rebuilt and did it the right way a little bit ahead of the Penguins. And I've seen a lot of people point that out on X. The Capitals have gone about it the right way. You know what? They had fewer good players. They didn't win at as high of a level as the Penguins. So the Penguins, they are in love with Crosby and Malkin and Letang and wanting these guys to finish their careers in Pittsburgh, and that's going to eat up a lot of salary cap space. And each of those three guys, by the way, aren't the problem with the Penguins. But the Penguins have been married to their past, and they got three guys. Backstrom? No. Sia? I mean, Tom Wilson's not a super old guy, so you keep him around. And then Ovechkin's playing at a high level. So when you've got more guys to keep and those guys age, it's a little bit harder to move on. I think that's nuance, or maybe it's not. Makes sense to me. How about another Pittsburgh headline from yesterday? Jared Triolo wins a gold glove at the super utility position. And I got two main takeaways from that. Number one, congratulations to you, Jared Triolo. And number two, you never should be allowed to win that award because you should not be playing that much. Jared Triolo, folks, had the fourth most plate appearances for the Pirates this year. Fourth most. Jared Triolo. I'll say it again for effect. Jared Triolo, fourth most plate appearances for the Pirates. Now, part of that is because Ke Bryan Hayes got hurt. No doubt. No doubt. So we want to look at this realistically and fairly. But that guy shouldn't be fourth on any team in Major League Baseball in plate appearances. And if he is, you're not going to win a lot of ball games. He's useful. He should be on the roster because he does play elite defense. But there's not a team in Major League Ball that should have that guy be fourth in plate appearances. But congratulations to you. Boy, is that like a backhanded compliment, Sean. Hey, way to go. Good job playing elite defense at multiple positions, but you shouldn't have been playing. All right, coming up next, the teams you didn't want to see win yesterday in the NFL won. We've got a bunch of Steelers-related wide receiver news, and that's where we'll go coming up next. Who's out there for the Steelers to try to trade for? The list is growing. There's a player that they were linked to that they almost had a deal done for. Didn't happen. Who reported it? Why didn't happen? We'll tell you about that coming up next. What happens if Omar Khan doesn't get a guy? We'll get into all of it over the course of the next hour, 412-928-9370. But right now, Fan Weather brought to you by Sun Chevrolet. It's here, the Chevy Red Tag event. Now through December 2nd, 0% APR for well-qualified buyers. Full terms at sunchevy.com. Mostly sunny today, high of 71.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.